This is Find a Way. Welcome to part two of my conversation with Larson McBride. This one is a doozy, folks. Larson, in his gentle, kind way, blows my mind with a simple reframing, with a simple truth, a truth that has been here since the very beginning. It's all around me. I have no excuse for not knowing it, except for the fact that I was brought up to think otherwise, and I have a feeling many of you were as well, which makes me very excited for you to be here and to listen and to allow somebody like Larson to be the one to introduce you to this reframing. It's a wonderful conversation throughout. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you to Larson for sharing his knowledge with us. I would be even more grateful if you were to take a moment today and give this podcast a review. Give us a star rating that you think is fair. Give a review that you think is honest. It would mean a lot to me just to see the feedback, but it also means a lot to the show in boosting our presence. These conversations deserve to be heard, and I appreciate any help you can give me to do that. So enjoy the rest of my conversation with Larson McBride. Thank you.
I think that that's an important thing to recognize and understand too, is that the way that we understand invasive species is the same construct that gave rise to the society that is living out a legacy of colonialism and genocide in our, you know, in our modern world. Even the term invasive species is like a militaristic kind of call to arms, and like nativist, you know, imaginary line in the sand that, you know, is really popular because what's popular in our society is like militarism and nationalism.
Exactly right.
And so it's easy, you know, to call all sorts of things invasive, humans and non-humans.
Yes.
For the people who are into that.
Right.
Because it's literally how they see the world. And they prefer that to having a relationship with the land that usually isn't going to give quote unquote invasive species the chance to even become an issue.
Right.
If, you know, like here's a big if, like in, if, or how do I want to talk about this? So I used to work on this crew that, a good friend of mine, you know, runs this consulting business where they just do invasive removal across Florida.
Yeah.
Most of their work is for the state, you know, in state parks, things like that. And their job is to perform the invasive removal so that ecological restoration can take place. Let's say you have just a, you know, acres and acres of nothing but invasive species, and they go in and they herbicide it and they cut all the trees down and they, you know, basically just like eliminate that so that the people who do like the ecological restoration of like, restoring, you know, degraded stream banks or reseeding native, you know, wildflowers and planting native trees and things like that, that has like a very positive trickle down effect for, you know, innumerable beings, can like happen. So why are there acres and acres of like these invasive species in the first place? Well, it's because people are not interacting with those acres and acres in ways that people have interacted with them for hundreds of thousands of years on this landmass. You know,
I never even thought about that. Yeah,
like, you know, like the big tool that it's kind of funny that it's become so talked about, but it's because it's like a really powerful one in so many ways, is fire, is prescribed fire.
Yeah.
You know, intentionally setting fire to forests to, you know, manage not just what's growing there, but also like what lives there and also how water moves through that landscape, how ecology happens. It's fire was like a very like prominent tool for like forming the ecological web for longer than Americans have established.
Right. Yeah.
You know? So that would be an example. So like if we're using fire to manage, I don't know, like water quality is a great one in Florida. If we're doing that on a large enough scale, then a lot of these so-called invasive species just don't ever show up, because if you're lighting the forest on fire every 2 to 3 years, then they don't really get a chance to gain a foothold. Even if they do end up there, they're usually not fire resistant.
Right.
There are some fire resistant invasive species, but, it still speaks to like a larger issue, which is that like, because humans believe themselves to be separate from, you know, the woods,
right,
or nature, things like that, that large swaths of land get just like totally neglected.
Yeah.
Which is just not how things have been, even outside of like this continent, just like pretty much any continent. The idea that nature is pristine when humans are not involved is a colonial mindset.
Yeah.
That grew out of the idea that goes back to like feudal, for, you know, for Americans, you know, feudal Europe.
Right.
The idea that, you know, all the like best land, quote unquote, which is the land that you can like make money off of,
yeah,
the land that you can like grow food and grow like so much food that you like are like sending it off and like selling it, and timber, and you grow so much timber that you're cutting it down and selling it, all this stuff, you're pulling minerals out of the ground, you're pulling stones out of the ground, you're engaging in like an extractive economy. So like all the good land belongs to like a monarch or the monarch's friends, and all of the like, you know, commercial land is like the monarch's friends' friends, and they're also engaging in some sort of like extractive,
right,
operation. You know, like they're not growing it like for themselves, they're growing it so that they can sell it, get rich, and then have, yeah, the land for themselves. It's just like this very like, you know, like they're separating themselves. And then there's the wastelands, which is like where most people live, because it's really great whenever most people don't have shit and they're broke. And so we don't want them living anywhere where we need to like have shit going on. The only reason that they should be in there is when they're working for us, you know? So then they live like in the wastelands, and the wastelands is where they're trying to like make a, like carve out a living for themselves in whatever way they can. And so then that land's not really quote unquote pristine, because you literally have to like utilize what you have to like grow food and,
right,
and produce, you know, firewood. You have to coppice trees to, you know, have fuel and build a house and all this stuff. And so it can be really easy to start to view the land that like the monarch owns, or the land where like no one really is allowed to go, as like pristine. And the society that creates starts to like eat so much that it starts to kind of eat its own tail. And it's like, well, we got to go find somewhere else to do our thing. And so that happened in Europe, such to an extent that they were like, hey man, I heard that like
there's a hole.
There's some land like on the other side of the ocean. You know, like let's go over there. Like, and so the Europeans came to a very sophisticated and complex, you know, network of societies, and immediately got them sick.
Yes.
And because their societies were so interwoven and, you know, like constantly interacting with each other, it didn't take long for a lot of them to like get sick, and it wasn't long before so many people got sick that people weren't able to manage the land. And so whenever like a whole bunch of Europeans started coming over here, it's like there's no one here. It was like if someone nuked New York and then everyone had to go live in the Adirondacks, and someone came to the Adirondacks and was like, oh man, y'all are fucked up, y'all don't know how to do anything. And it's like, yeah. Literally like,
no, we were actually really,
yeah,
just
we were,
fine.
Yeah, we were killing it. And so, but their practices were like still and traditions were still like intact, and a lot of people, like their societies, like hadn't collapsed. And so they were doing like very sophisticated land management, like prescribed burning, like herding bison, that had like such profoundly positive impacts on the ecology that were, you could, because you don't know anything, you're just taking it for granted, because your goal is conquest and extraction,
yeah,
and occupation. So a lot of those practices were like, what are you doing? Like, you don't like the why are you burning the woods down? And so it was like the opposite of what people had come to see as being pristine, you know? And that's why when the U.S. started like really ramping up the genocide and Manifest Destiny, that these practices like prescribed burning and, you know, and kind of like more like ecologically minded, you know, game management, you know, suppressing that wasn't just an effective tool of colonialism. It was also like, that's not how you,
yeah,
how you manage a wilderness. And so the suppression result brought us to where we are today, where forests that are supposed to have been burned are so piled up with fuels that they eventually do catch on fire, and it's just a massive conflagration. Yeah. The extirpation of like keystone species is trickling down to result in the marginalization and extinction of other species. Right. And the traditions of like how to stop that from happening have been stomped out by the mechanisms of colonialism and the genocide. And so even if you were to be like, you know what, like maybe we had it all wrong, you got rid of the source that would have known,
yeah, the stewards,
how to take care of this. And just like on a human level, like you have caused so much pain and suffering that you have created, like going back to like the symbolism that you see in nature, like you have created an environment where pain and suffering is not just inevitable, but it is like, it is a very prominent,
right,
component of things. And so now it's like, yeah, like you don't have actual like intact ecological webs. You have your untouched pristine wilderness that's full of like landscape plants that you brought over here because you thought they were going to look nice, and they dropped some berries into the, right, creek, and now they're just everywhere. And wow. and hardly anything is able to grow there. And so like traditional food sources for all types of non-human people are just gone. And yeah, so there's like a lot less bird song, there's a lot less like activity, and things have taken on a very like kind of drastic and almost like hostile component to them.
Holy shit. You, first of all, you, I am 100% guilty of thinking this mindset that you're talking about, of like this assumption that true wilderness and paradise means no human involvement. Like, that has been baked into me so hard that I can't believe I'm 41 years old and I'm just now thinking about humans' role in land management, like beyond what we do now, you know, just the idea that we had it, that we, again, this goes back to one of the first things that we talked about today, that, yeah, we're a part of this.
Yeah.
We're a part of this ecosystem. We have a role to play in it, and we were playing the right role. Like, we were doing the right thing mm-hmm. for so long and creating this, like, this paradise that they talk about all the time. And yet, like, this idea that, like, no, the only paradise is one where humans don't touch it. It's like, yeah, it's because of the humans that came in here and touched it and fucked it up and, like, poisoned it.
Yeah.
Those are the humans that I'm thinking about. Like, yeah, we got to find land where none of those humans have been there. But the integral position that human beings held before all of that.
Right.
Oh, my God.
Right.
You're blowing my mind.
I think that that's what people in general really want. Like, I don't think that we as animals are really geared towards rugged individualism. So, like, it's not your fault.
I mean, yeah, of
it's
course.
It's not your fault that you feel this way. I spent so many years of my life feeling this way too, and, like, I'm a recovering rugged individualist as well. You know? And can you blame us? Like, we live, you know, just, like, all the other, like, philosophical things aside, like, you know, we live in this stressful-ass fucking society, and, like, sometimes you just want to, like, get away from it all and, like, don't want to, like, be around people or, like, have to do anything and all this stuff. And so, like, so it is, like, very, you know, attractive to think that, like, it'd be cool if I could just go out in the woods and just, like, not talk and not hear anybody. And, like, that's great, too. I'm not saying that, like...
Of course,
but, like, it's good medicine, but, like, the reason why we have such a compulsion to seek out that medicine is because, like, we do not have a balance of it. Not just in our personal daily lives, but just, like, in our society. I think that, you know, like I said, I do think that people want to just generally have that balance, and it goes back to, like, having a society, having a hierarchical structure in society where the people with the most wealth, not just money, but just kind of, like, wealth is, like, a general term. Mm-hmm. Like, the people with the most wealth are considered to be the people who, like, have accumulated the most of the things that make them wealthy and, like, do not share it.
Yeah.
As opposed to societies which have existed in every place, where the people who are the most wealthy are considered to be powerful in how much of that wealth they, like, redistribute.
Right.
It's almost like that is like the real power move, to be like, nah, like, actually I want y'all to have this.
You know, that's one of the things that sits so uncomfortably within me with the current conflict that we have in our class, the class system that we have, or whatever you want to call it. Like, it feels like an impossible task to go up to some of these one percenters, or not even one percenters, just, like, you know, the millionaires, the, you know, the people who have more than they need, to go to them and say, like, I don't want you to redistribute because I'm trying to get your shit.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to redistribute because it's going to save all of us. And that includes you. Like, this, I don't know what it's like to be ultra wealthy. You know, I don't know what it's like to own a jet or a boat, like a big, you know, whatever, a yacht. I don't know what it's like to sort of, you know, not worry about survival when it comes to like, am I going to have food and things like that, to be able to buy anything, to go anywhere, to do anything. I don't know what that's like. I imagine it's super cool to an extent, but I cannot imagine that it is anything close to the feeling of like really being a part of something and like playing your role as someone who actually, this like trickle down idea, which is completely, you know, bullshit, and nobody is even questioning that anymore, to actually be able to embody the role of someone who has the power to connect and to save and to like create this paradise, as opposed to like being the dragon sitting atop their hoard of gold and just being like, go away, like keep away from me. Like, that is not human nature. It's not, that's an invasive species. Like that is something that needs to be, you know, like I want for them to just believe me. You know, I want for them to believe that like, we're not you. Like, and that's like one of the biggest mind fucks of it, is that like all the stuff that I feel that that class is, that they distance themselves from us and hate us and fear us, they fear that we want to do the same thing that they're doing. Mm-hmm. And it's that projection of like, no, you can't have my stuff. I see what you're trying to do. You're just trying to get my wealth out of my hands. I worked hard for this wealth. It's my blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you don't need this wealth. You don't like it. It's not meant for you. It's not helping you either. It's not, just like if a tree could like hoard all the water in the area, it doesn't need all that water. It would end up hurting it. It would end up, like rotting it out.
Yeah.
You know?
And even if the tree thought that it could, it actually can't. I mean, trees suck up water again, like through the microscopically,
right,
tiny ends of roots that are so far away from it, and they suck up water. It's not a pump. It's not the way that you and I suck. It's a pressure gradient that's literally like the difference between a positively and negatively charged like ion, and the cells that move the water in the living tissue of the tree are able to do so because they're so incredibly thin that it's almost like whenever you put a straw into a glass of water and a little bit of water goes up the straw.
Right.
And the thinner the straw is, the higher the water goes up. And the trees, tracheids is what they're called, are so thin that it literally just like pulls the water up until you get to up the trunk, out into the branch, into the twig, and then the ends of the leaf have, you know, again, these, you know, conglomeration of charged particles surrounding these little, they literally look like little mouths, and the charge pulls the water towards the end of the leaf, and depending on how much water is inside the leaf and outside the leaf, the little mouths, they're called guard cells, will open up. And it's a chemical reaction, and you can actually see it, like on a day like today. Like, it's not just the lighting; all of the leaves outside are actually a deeper shade of green than they normally are, because there is more water. There's so much water in the outside air, and they open, and all that water that's been sucked up from the root to the leaf is, I don't know, expired into the air as water vapor.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening when they say, you know, trees actively cool the air around us.
Yes.
That's why trees are like, it's not just cooler underneath there because there's shade. It's also like air conditioning.
Right.
So even if the tree wanted to hold on to all that water, like, it would have a really hard time. Some trees are really good at holding on to water, and they've adapted to like live in like droughty situations,
right.
You know, like pines are a great example. It seems like the older the farther back in time trees are, like all the gymnosperms, all the trees that make cones, they're all really good at that. You know, they've been through like a lot of shit.
Sure, yeah.
They've made it this far because they've been able to adapt to so many millions and millions of years more worth of different, you know, situations. But they can only hold on to so much water.
Yeah.
And so even if humans want to hold on to as many, you know, resources of whatever, like it's, you know, it's going to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Eventually, you know, but in the meantime, you know, does it cause suffering? I don't know. I don't know that like having things causes suffering, but I think that you can engage in activities to get things that does cause suffering.
Yeah, that's you what know? It is. Yeah, the possession of the thing.
Right. And, you know, everybody's got some kind of trust issue, you know, one way or the other. And I, you know, I always, you know, when I get into this, I always want to like be clear that like, I'm not saying that like, it's like billionaire's responsibility to like fix the biodiversity crisis because given the situation, you know, if that were to happen, then they would, you know, if you don't get rid of the whole system of ownership, then you own biodiversity,
right?
Just the same way that you own, you know, the climate. Now there's plenty of like multi-million dollar corporations who make their money doing ecological restoration, and like is that ideal? No, but given the situation, it's like, well, at least you're not doing that. You know,
of course.
Yeah, you know, pulling oil through the tar sands, yeah, shipping it down to Houston.
Right.
Like, I think that's, or, and like displacing people off of their land, obviously, you know, all the while, you know, but like, again, it's like, I can box out all that good stuff and be in my good box, but then eventually, like, there's going to be some bad stuff in my good box.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, of course, there's no, I'll make it very clear too. I don't necessarily think that it's my right to go and like take something that isn't mine. My thought on it more is like the philosophy of it. You know, like I don't want it to feel, there is a divide, and both sides are afraid of each other. And the thing that we're afraid of is what's happening, or at least the thing I'm afraid of is what's happening right now, which is that people with tons of money and tons of power are going to start abusing it and using it to, you know, dare I say, like try to enslave others to their will, you know, like possibly. The other side, their side being afraid of us, they're afraid that we're coming for their money, that we're coming for, you know, that we're going to come with a guillotine and, you know, take all their stuff. And that's just not what I'm interested in. I'm really not interested in taking their money. I'm not interested in taking their yacht. I'm not interested in taking their, whatever, their passions or anything like that. I'm interested in the idea that like, this, we are in this system, which I disagree with, but we are in the system of ownership, and you own so much that it's making it hard for others to like take up a space, you know, mm-hmm. and like, and exist, just like, and that's why I compared it to an invasive species, you know, it's just that like they're spreading it, their spread is their ownership, and it's like spreading and spreading and spreading, and like these ecosystems are collapsing. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I mean, that's, it's complicated. And actually it makes me think about, something that came up, you know, up here in my old noggin when we first started talking about invasive species. And, you know, one of the things that I think is a major contributor to our feelings on this is that, like, as humans in general, very general, most humans think of death and extinction as a bad thing, because like we don't want to die and we don't want to be extinct, right? But is it bad, right? Isn't like the concept of bad is a human concept in the first place, you know? Mm-hmm. Is it bad when a hawk flies down and catches a rodent and kills it, and the rodent's got a family, and now the family's going to starve, but the hawk lives? And do we call that evil? Do we call that bad? No, we just call it nature. It's death. But for some reason, like our death, our extinction, the idea of extinction, the idea of something existing and then never existing again, we think of as bad because it's uncomfortable, and it kind of gives us the willies. But at the same time, it's just what happens. It's just inevitable. So we put this label on it. It's bad, you know, but it's just uncomfortable. It's just
sure. Yeah. And getting a whole bunch of people to be uncomfortable with one of the like very few indisputable facts of life is like, it's a great way to get them to buy shit.
You are 100% correct.
It's a great way to get people to you know, also hoard resources and act like you. And you know, when you get people all, you know, fearful and riled up, it's like real easy to, you know, make suggestions that, you know, stick in their minds. And
of course.
And because if people are disoriented in general, then that's a great time to imprint something into their subconscious that they may not even be like aware of. If you don't fear death, and if you look at death as something that's inevitable, and you live your life in such a way to where you try to think about persistently benefiting other beings other than yourself and helping others and doing good things, helping alleviate the suffering of others. And if you just so happen to die while you're doing it, then death becomes not such a prominent fixture. It doesn't become the most important detail. It becomes just kind of like the thing that will, you know, make this kind of stop.
Yeah.
And so the most important detail becomes helping others.
Yeah.
And trying to put that intention there. And so it's like, it's energy moving through an ecosystem.
Yeah.
Just like the hawk eating the rat, you know, is that something that we're like, we can be like, yes, that is the trophic effect, you know?
Yeah.
So listener, in our neighborhood, there are a lot of cats and they're all pets of somebody. And many of them, since I have lived in this neighborhood, have begun to disappear because they're being predated by coyotes. And I am one of those people who lives with a cat who I love very dearly.
Yeah.
She is like massively improves my quality of life and brings me so much happiness, and I care for her so much.
Right.
And I have rearranged not only my life, but her life too, to ensure that she does not become predated by a coyote, because to me, that's not energy moving up the trophic chain of events. That is the worst thing that could happen to me.
Yes.
And and I look at it as me, like, I don't even look at it. And you know, I think about her being scared as well, but I am not, you know, I'm not 100% certain that for her getting eaten by a coyote would be any less enjoyable than like when the vets come over and like,
sure.
You know,
yeah.
You know, take a blood sample or stick a needle in her bladder or anything like that. You know, it's
yeah, so, we'll put.
you know? So it is in the end, just, you know, energy moving through the ecosystem, and so is us dying. So if a dragon's on top of its hoard, and, you know, the dragon dies and the hoard is, you know, redistributed, like it's going to go somewhere and it has to end, you know, eventually. I just don't feel really motivated to be the dragon, because it sounds like a crappy way to live.
Yeah. Lonely.
You know, and yeah, like a net harmful way to live on one level for myself, but also, you know, for other beings.
Sure. Yeah. I don't really want to be the dragon slayer either. You know, I mean, I want to be like the dragon whisperer, you know, like,
yeah, I don't know anything about being a dragon, but I'm sure that they can, you know, they can be communicated with. And, you know, at the end of the day, some people are probably good at being dragon whisperers, and a lot of them run nonprofits. But I'm
well
not,
said, yeah.
I'm not much of a dragon whisperer.
Yeah.
I try to identify things that I can do to be, you know, of service to the people around me, the humans and the non-humans, and I just try to do those things. You know, being that I'm in a human body, I think it's helpful to think on a human scale. So, like, going back to your thing of, like, will everything become, like, invasive in some capacity in some place somewhere in the world eventually? Like, yeah, like, maybe, but, like, that's, like, a really, you know, that's kind of outside my wheelhouse.
Yeah.
You know, like the tree we're going to plant in your yard, like, yeah. I would probably, like, pull weeds from around the tree. Like, I'm not just planting the tree just to plant the tree. Like, we're planting the tree because the tree is going to have a multitude of benefits for beings that I don't want, like, may not ever see, may not ever know, may not ever really, like, interact with, but, like, it'll, you know, it'll be there. I know we talked about Rupert, but I don't think the individual, like, specimens are, like, really all that individual, like, even humans.
I agree, actually.
You know, I think that there's something that, you know, that gets shared just in, I don't know what the mechanism of it is. Like, maybe it's DNA, whatever it is, you know, but we're sharing something, kind of like the unspoken and maybe even unlearned cultures and traditions and habits and inclinations and, like, the, like, drop down list of options for, like, how to go about through the world, you know, like, they get shared. And so, like, if I pull some Bidens from up around a tree that I planted, I'm not, like, getting rid of the Bidens. I'm just, like, moving that one. And a lot of times I'll probably, like, well, if it's Bidens, I'll probably, like, eat it. or I'll, like, tear it up and put it next to, you know, some other Bidens, because there are microorganisms that I can't name and can't see that exist solely to, like, eat that matter and break it down and, like, excrete it as, like, the chemicals that are necessary to maintain the soil ecology, which is critical to the existence of, like, all the other Bidens, which, you know, have innumerable positive benefits for, I mean, we can see the insects and the birds and things like that, but there's also, like, tons of, like, like, creepy and crazy and microscopic things that, like, live in the soil that, like, you know, that are benefiting from it as well.
So it, you know, like, you said in the beginning of this, you know, I was talking about how I've got this, like, this hole in my education when it comes to, like, flora and fauna and, like, just natural sciences. And your response was like, yeah, well, a lot of people who study the natural sciences wish that they didn't have this deficit in social sciences. But, like, everything you're saying, your mentality that you're taking to this, and I really like the way you said it just a little while ago. You were saying, like, if you take the focus off of death and instead focus on decreasing suffering and like alleviating suffering and helping. And now just hearing you talking about like the thoughtfulness you have for, well, I'm pulling this thing out, but that doesn't mean I have to like put it in a pile to die. Like I can, there are so many levels of life that exist in this handful of plant matter that I've got in my hands. And if I can go find a good spot to put it, it's going to help those things that I don't even know are there. This is what social science should be, right? Like this is how we should be approaching each other on every single level of existence. And again, this goes right back to how we started. It's like, we cannot extricate ourselves from the natural sciences, even our social emotional selves. As soon as we start saying that there's a division between them, we've missed the boat. If we like make a human equivalent to some of the things we're talking about, like even you taking the thought about like, well, I'm going to probably have to pull out some of these weeds, but like we have to think about how, you know, this tree is going to impact this area. Did colonialists have any, did they give two shits about how they're going to impact the area? You know?
Yes.
Okay.
They did. But the shits that they gave were really evil shits.
It's like big nasty piles. Absolutely. Of like,
yeah,
piece of, yeah, shit shits.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, exactly. Right. And it's we, you know, we exist here now as the result of that invasion. And here, look at us, like we are in the midst of suffering the consequences of it. Just like you said, you know, yeah, like these pristine environments don't exist the way they could and did. And we are suffering for it. You know, yeah, we being the DNA extensions of many of these motherfuckers,
mm-hmm,
you know, the price is being paid. They just didn't necessarily pay it.
Yeah. Yeah. The lands in this continent were pristine because people were interacting with them.
Right.
And not because there was nobody here.
Right.
In places where no one is, you can see the quality of the environment is very poor. And what I mean by that is like how much life is sustained there.
Mm-hmm.
I think a fair approximation for like what's the quality of land, you know, and not just life, but also like other, you know, if you want to draw lines, you can call them abiotic things.
Sure.
Like, and I think water is a great one, mm-hmm, to go back to, because it's, you know, shout out to water.
I really wish I could have like 24 hours in your brain. Your perspective on so many things is so refreshing, but also like what it makes me want to do is like revisit so many thoughts I've had already. I don't know.
Well, I didn't learn all this stuff overnight, and you know, I'm still still thinking about it, and thoughts come in and out of my head, and not all of them are great, and some of them are cool, and a lot of them I forget about, and
yeah, it's the nature of life, right?
Yeah, and so you know, I would just say keep on doing what you're doing, and learn more about things that you find interesting, and
yeah,
because you know, like I could be wrong about a lot of this stuff, and I think it's just side note. I want to make a quick plug. I guess this is one of my pillars, just constantly be like, maybe I'm totally wrong.
Yeah.
Across the board.
Yep.
Definitely, you know, do that. You know, that's just as fun of a mind game as like looking at, you know, little things in nature and being like, what does that mean?
Right.
You know, be like, what does that mean? And then be like, maybe I'm totally wrong.
Yeah. Well, and also that, you know, depending on your definition of right or wrong, like if being right means knowing the full truth and nature of something, then we're always wrong all the time about everything. Wrong. You know, because
constantly be like, whatever thought I had is either incomplete,
right,
or you know, not correct.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And like one of the things I love most about doing this podcast, you know, I mean, it's also stressful sometimes, but like when I go back and listen, I take so much more from the conversation than I did the first time. And I don't, you know, it's just like reading a book a second time and you learn so much more from it. It's really enhanced my, these like experiences, just being able to go back and re-listen, and especially knowing everything that we've talked about now and being able to go back and listen to the beginning of it changes the meaning of it. Just like every conversation that I have with you changes our relationship, right?
Yeah, sure.
And then like the next time we get together, we're building on that.
Yeah. God has changed.
That's right.
Shout out to Octavia Butler.
Yeah. God has changed. Thanks so much for doing this.
I don't feel quite done yet.
Yeah.
I got to go pee real quick.
I think you should.
And then when I come back, let's get back to the point you were trying to make earlier about UFOs.
Oh, yeah. Excellent. Heck yes. Thank you so much for finding your way here today to my conversation with Larson. Special thank you to Larson, not just for the beautiful conversation and all that I learned, but also for Larson's energy. I just love getting to the end of a conversation with somebody and having them be the one who says, hey, you know, I don't feel like I'm done yet. I want more. Because that's what I always feel. Every time I get together with a friend for lunch or have a band practice or just sitting around talking around a fire, whenever it is that we get finished, I'm always thinking to myself, I want more. I want to keep going. I want to share more. I want to learn more. And so it's so nice to have my conversation partner say it to me before I can. And so thank you, Larson, for doing that. And thank you for joining the podcast. There is a part three. Larson and I jump right back in. We start talking about what Larson was seeking, some more information about owls and their connection to UFO folklore, to indigenous peoples, things like that. I find it fascinating, and don't really know where I land on the belief structure for it, but I am fascinated by it nonetheless. And Larson has plenty more to share as well, including his own story of the paranormal or something like it. Can't really pinpoint it, but I hope you don't mind waiting, because I've got plans for it. I've got plans for a lot of stories like that that will be released later this year. So I hope you don't mind waiting. It's going to be worth it. It's a wonderful story from Larson. It gave me chills. And I think you're going to like it a lot. So please be patient. In the meantime, I hope parts one and two suffice to hold you over until our next episode. In the meantime, I would so appreciate it, and I would be so grateful if you would take an extra moment today and give this podcast a review. A star rating really helps. Leaving some comments really helps, especially to boost the presence of this podcast. As I've said many times before, it's not necessarily that I think I'm super important and I deserve to be heard, but I do believe that just because we aren't big worldwide celebrities, it doesn't mean that we don't have something important to share, and it doesn't mean that those important things can't help someone through a hard time, or help someone just be entertained for a while, help somebody think about something from a different perspective. We are important inherently, regardless of our global presence. And so I would love to put that theory to the test and allow as many people as possible to hear these wonderful people that I get to sit down and talk with, live with, commune with, you know, like you. So thank you for finding your way here. Thank you for helping me with this project. And I hope the coming week finds you happy and healthy. I'll see you next time. Find a Way is brought to you by the Show and Tell Network, which is a network that I just made up, but everything else was made up anyway, so I figured, why can't I have one?